upgrade your tool storage for the new year with help from Menards. For heavy-duty storage that protects your tools, choose MasterForce. From shelving units to cabinets and so much more, you can keep your tools safe and within reach. Get versatile and durable storage from MasterForce today. Check out all our MasterForce storage in-store or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. If you're paying more than $1 a month for any ED or hair medication, listen up. At Joy & Blokes, when you start TRT or enclomiphene, you can add any ED or hair loss prescription for just $1 a month. $1 add-ons with your hormone plan, and right now, all labs are 50% off. I'm Josh Whalen, founder of Joy & Blokes. I built this company because men are tired of paying for fragmented care without results. Every Joy & Blokes lab includes a visit with a licensed clinician who connects your symptoms to your biomarkers. You'll get a real plan that covers hormones, performance, and confidence. If you're considering TRT or enclomiphene, this is the most efficient way to do it. Get started at joyandblokes.com and use the promo code PODCAST. New customers get 50% off their labs, and for a limited time, you can take advantage of our $1 ED or hair loss add-ons when you start TRT or enclomiphene. Not available in all states. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Learn more at joyandblokes.com.
And welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Acton. With me today is Kyle Tighe. Kyle, how you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, appreciate you coming on. How's your offseason been? It's been like 4 months since you've watched a Timberwolves game, and we're finally possibly coming out of the darkness here.
It goes by fast. It's been good, been traveling and stuff. But then I said this on Dane Moore's pod the other day, but every 10 days I'll randomly find myself, like I did last night, 11 p.m. after Monday Night Football, and I'm just watching Game 7 Timberwolves Nuggets in its entirety on YouTube. So if you haven't done that yet, it's a nice way to kind of get yourself back into Timberwolves shape. But yeah, 2 weeks from yesterday, we have Timberwolves Media Day for 2025 coming up. So before you know it, Ryan, it's going to be here again. So I hope everyone enjoyed their time off because the chaos is coming back.
So you don't want to talk Vikings?
I don't want this podcast to get in trouble. I have some bad thoughts about the Vikings right now.
Want to break down Carson Wentz versus Jake Browning? That's not your...
No, my dad's a North Dakota State grad. My mom's a North Dakota State grad. They are so happy now, and it's like, Dad, just stop. Like, I don't want to... That's why I said yesterday, it's like the Carson Wentz news came out, JJ McCarthy's out, and it's like, hey, Timberwolves fans, 2 weeks, we're almost there. So, and plus... Let's not, you know, bury the lead. The Lynx right now are the best Minnesota sports team in the state. So we're getting close, but no, the Vikings, 2 weeks in, Ryan, and I am super depressed.
Yeah. My first game attending as a student at Iowa State, Carson Wentz and North Dakota State came in and beat them when the football program is good now, was not back then.
I was at that game.
In Ames?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
So we would have not known each other yet, but I was at that game. So, and Iowa State's good at football now, right? So
they are now. They were not. My first 3 years, they won a total of 8 games, and then they won that same amount my senior year. And then
congrats to you for all the NIL money you probably gave them. So,
yeah, no, I think we gave Iowa State enough money, especially because my wife went there. So our household, we did enough.
Okay, that's fair.
All right, we can stop talking football, especially as the Vikings are unwatchable. I wanted to get before we kind of really dive in, your overall Wolves vibes kind of heading into the, like you mentioned, the preseason, coming off last year where it's hard to say anything. Last year was anything but a success. Your gap year was true and not true.
Right.
But what are your Wolves vibes? Where are we at heading into the preseason?
I would say externally, like even yesterday when I said like, hey, we're 2 weeks away from the Wolves, I had a couple people like, yeah, we're worse this year than we were last year. Like already kind of like the doom and gloom was back and it was September 15th. I think maybe you could have been disappointed in the lack of moves this summer. I mean, they kind of did all their free agent stuff, Ryan, before free agency started by re-signing Julius and re-signing Nas. But they're kind of on the second version of the run it back tour. that we saw a couple of years ago, when after the Carl and Rudy experiment didn't really work in year one, they just leaned into what is a big term for this organization now, continuity. And then that's when they made the Western Conference Finals. So I think this year their plan was keep our guys, you know, sniff around the edges. They were invested in that Kevin Durant possibility. They didn't want to pay that price. Kevin Durant didn't want to come here. So they just said, okay, we'll just keep the, you know, 13 of the 15 guys we had last year, and we'll move forward. So I think internally, the vibes are great. I mean, you've seen more guys, which again, if you're a longtime Timberwolves fan like you and I are, it's not always been the case that guys stay here in the summer. They always go somewhere else. And Ant was all over the world, and guys do go to California and Miami and Atlanta. But for the most part, you talk to people with the team, just all the dudes have been in there every morning working out, kind of building that chemistry, getting to know each other more, working together like Mike and Rob. So I think the vibes for them is really great. Plus the ownership stuff's behind them. They have kept their coaching staff and their whole front office. So there's really kind of no excuses. You know what I mean? And I think that'll be a theme for me moving forward, is like the guys that needed to get paid got paid. Anyone else that needed to clear up any other stuff cleared it up. And now it's just, how focused can these guys be on punching through that ceiling of the Western Conference Finals and not only trying to win more than one game, but also trying to get to the NBA Finals and ultimately a championship?
Yeah, and I think the continuity point is good. But like my point with, like, I do kind of feel like to be like, to win the title, they're going to have to make one more like big swing move for something. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea for Durant. We don't have to rehash the Durant stuff, but like the minute Durant doesn't want to be here, it's just kind of moot. I know you didn't necessarily like the idea. It depended on what was going in and out, but like you didn't necessarily like the Durant idea from the beginning, and it never even like it never got anywhere just because like Durant didn't want to be here. And I think everyone, even the most bullish Kevin Durant people, were like, yeah, it's not worth it anymore. Mm-hmm. And so once that, like, there wasn't this big move out there. No one's calling for, at least I'm not calling for them to make a big move for big move's sake. And so they did what I thought they did, what they did. Like, Nikhil was unfortunately the most expendable piece they had of like the three free agents, and they brought back Nas and Julius. I think, and this can kind of lead us into my big questions. I'm going to do like big questions heading into the season. My first one that I probably will circle back with whoever does my last pod of the preseason is, what constitutes a successful season for the Wolves? Because I kind of think like right now that's the most interesting question. And like, there's a lot of different ways to look at it, like regular season wins, like individual player development. But like, when I ask that, what is the first thing that comes to mind? What would constitute a successful season?
I think a month ago I answered that to Dane. I was like, I think it's a failure if they don't make the Western Conference Finals again. And then I kind of thought about it more, because if they just were to make the Western Conference Finals for the third year in a row and quote unquote make the Final Four, but lose in five, is that better than, like, I don't know, beating the Thunder in the Western Conference semis and then just losing to like a hot Nuggets team or something? I don't know. But I do kind of think, even though I've revised my thought on it, it still is the same in terms of being a Final Four team, maybe a Final Eight team that you lose in seven. But there is kind of an expectation now of winning. And that's, again, so weird to say, but Anthony Edwards has never echoed any sort of, you know, disappointment or like anything about being in a quote unquote smaller market. He loves it here. But I always wonder, like, is that just because they've been good? And Ant's the driving force for this team and this organization turning it around. But, you know, if they ever were to stumble, right, or lose in six games in the first round, does that noise get a little louder? So I think for them, again, they didn't, like, I go back to the whole coaching staff front office continuity thing. It's like they got the new ownership figured out, but they didn't lose Matt Lloyd, or they didn't lose anyone in the front office. They didn't lose any of Chris Finch's top assistants. They didn't lose any of, I mean, Nikhil aside, they lost, what, one of their eight starters, and now they're looking at three young guys and TJ and Rob and Jalen Clark, who should add to that and make it 10 starters. So I think trying to make the Final Four this year would be really good, but we are going to have to get really uncomfortable, Ryan, at some point, and say like the expectations for this, because you don't really get an Anthony Edwards all the time, right? He is kind of a once in a decade type prospect for a team like the Timberwolves. So at some point the expectations need to win a title. I think this year, you talked about Julius and Nas and stuff, like they've set themselves up to be flexible maybe they won't be a hardcore like second apron team again just because of the penalties for that, but they're just trying to set themselves up to what you said earlier is like they probably at some point need to make one more splashy move, whether it be this season, next summer, right? When Rudy's contract gets a little more palatable, Julius only has 2 years left. So I'm with you on that. But yeah, man, they got to win games and no one has any more excuses. And I would be disappointed if they're not playing basketball in mid-May.
Yeah, I think what's interesting to me is it's going to come a point where basically it's going to be quote unquote championship or bust. And it's not that bust is the wrong word, but like basically the expectation is win a title every year. And it's not you're not going to win five in a row, but you're going to have a string of five seasons where you go into the season and be like, we can win the championship. If XYZ go right, or if we get whatever thing to go our way, we'll win it. And I'm with this current roster, I think they're just like half a step behind that mm-hmm. line of thinking. And that's mm-hmm. like where that big move comes in. And I it's hard to imagine a successful season where they don't win at least a playoff round. But I do think I can concoct a scenario where they lose in like the second round and we view it as successful. Maybe like basically they win 55 games and that's somehow the four seed and they go up against Oklahoma City in the second round and they lose in seven, where it's just like it was a coin flip and they ended up losing. And I think there's a path there to you're like this is a successful season. But I want to kind of hit a few of them. So their regular season wins over under is 49.5. And so to me, that's, I probably do this every year, but like that seems like an obvious over. Like it's hard to imagine this team not winning 50 games, but also if they win exactly 50, it's hard to, I don't think that's like enough. And it's certainly like title teams are not 50 and math is hard. How many games? 50 and 32.
Yeah.
15 teams that are 50 and 32 don't win the title. They just don't. And so you're going to have to blow past the Vegas over-under if this year is like your title team. But just starting with like regular season wins, where would you put like the pinpoint as like, and it maybe they like they're locked into the two seed by whatever two or three, four seed. And they're like the exact number doesn't always matter, but like what is the number like you view as like, this is where this version of this team needs to get to.
So they're over under right now, according to our friends in Vegas, as you said, is 49.5. They were 49-33 last year and five teams in the West won 50 or more games. So I'm with you like on that. Like, I don't know. I have to kind of, again, keep thinking about and marinating on if they made the Western Conference Finals for a third year in a row, but lost in five, would I be disappointed or would I be happy? But regular season, back to the continuity thing, I feel like this team is built to just eat innings. Like they have all the same guys. They're not going to be able to use the excuse of, I mean, God forbid we're doing this in middle of September. Anything could happen, as we've learned last year, but they're going to have a lot of the same guys. Julius and Dante will have a year under their belt. Then they have some youth that's like ready to play. And we'll talk about TJ, I'm sure, today, and Jalen and Rob, but they should just win a ton of regular season games barring any injuries. So if they go to 50-32, I think it's the scar tissue still, Ryan, that I'm like, I think if they win 50 games, I'd be happy. But 50 games is probably what it's going to take to be a four seed or like a top four seed in the West. I do think that home court advantage stuff is still really important, even though the Timberwolves have shown to be a pretty good road team and ironically kind of a funky home team. But I'm going to hammer the over, not just because we're, you know, glass half full optimists, but this team has a lot of just the same pieces that they should be able to go out there and just on a cold night in January, just use that experience, that continuity, having the ability to play 10 different guys and just win a bunch of games. So yeah, like 55-27. I don't really think that type of record, again, barring injury, is out of the question.
Yeah. And I think my general take on this Wolves team is I am extremely bullish on their regular season chances. Like you mentioned, yep. I just think they're going to be able to rattle off wins. Like Mike is obviously will play less than he did last year. I think for a different pod, if he should start is an interesting discussion. But other than Mike, like this whole roster is just built to win regular season basketball games. If Mike's not playing, they have enough guards to kind of filter in behind them. every team's going to get hurt. So you hope you're in the, you get above average injury luck there. But I think they're well set up to if X player misses a week with a rolled ankle, like they're well set up to kind of to paper over that. And I think last year, like they were fourth in net rating last year. I don't think that like we really halfway through the year, like it just felt like a black hole of abyss. And they ended up fourth in net rating, top 10 in both. Like it, as far as net rating concerned, they were one of the best teams in the NBA. And so I just think that that's going to carry over. Dante said something in his exit press a bunch of months ago that was like, he had certain spots on the court with New York he knew he was going to be able to get to. And because of the trade, they were never really able to get those actions for him. And I just think like that type of stuff with Julius and Dante is going to be so much better, because they're going to have a whole training camp with it. They basically made a trade deadline deal in the preseason because I can't imagine a worse time. Cause like if you're getting dealt at the deadline, I think for the very seldom is that player taken off guard.
Mm-hmm.
That you kind of, maybe it's surprising, but like at the back of your mind, you have to know like it was a possibility. I don't think any of the three players, Julius, Dante, or Kat, really had any idea that they were getting traded. And I just think I think it was a trade that had to be done, but also it really kind of tanked their regular season in a lot of ways. And I just feel like with the, I know the buzzword is continuity, but that's what they have and what's going to at least carry them in the regular season. And I think like second seed regular season is possible.
If you're paying more than $1 a month for any ED or hair medication, listen up. At Joy & Blokes, when you start TRT or enclomiphene, you can add any ED or hair loss prescription for just $1 a month. $1 add-ons with your hormone plan, and right now all labs are 50% off. I'm Josh Whalen, founder of Joy & Blokes. I built this company because men are tired of paying for fragmented care without results. Every Joy & Blokes lab includes a visit with a licensed clinician who connects your symptoms to your biomarkers. You'll get a real plan that covers hormones, performance, and confidence. If you're considering TRT or enclomiphene, this is the most efficient way to do it. Get started at joyandblokes.com and use the promo code PODCAST. New customers get 50% off their labs, and for a limited time, you can take advantage of our $1 ED or hair loss add-ons when you start TRT or enclomiphene. Not available in all states. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Learn more at joyandblokes.com.
Yeah, I mean, for me in the West, I'm sure I'm echoing how you feel too, but like there is like a OKC is like in its own little tier, if you were to break down tiers. And then for me, tier two is with a bullet, like pretty firm, the Nuggets, the Rockets, and the Wolves. But with the Rockets, even who did win the Kevin Durant sweepstakes, like there's still questions there, because again, like you just said, they got Kevin Durant a few months before media day, unlike when the Wolves traded for Dante and Julius, but you still got to see how it works. So I agree with everything you said. And I also think, just to kind of debut what will be, I know I used the phrase gap year last year, my favorite phrase this year is probably going to be like the mantra of no excuses. Because even what you just said about Julius and Dante, it's like, okay, I kind of get it. And I talked to Dante like after games and stuff, and it's like, it did take a while because, and we don't think about this, and I know with professional athletes and millionaires, we don't even really like to accept it, but it's like, dude, he has a wife and like a kid. Like he kind of had to figure out living in a brand new area of the country and all that, all the stuff that goes with it. I know you as a father sometimes have to figure out your podcast schedule and your work schedule with picking up your kid from daycare. So there's a lot that goes into that, but now that's gone, right? Like Nas, I would, you know, you'd talk to him after a game and you'd be in the locker room and he's focused on that night and winning the game. But in the back of his mind, he wanted to get $100 million. Well, he got that. Like Mike Conley last summer, if you remember, couldn't pick up a golf club because he had that nagging wrist injury. Fast forward to this year, and he just got one of his first hole-in-ones like 2 weeks ago in Minneapolis. So anywhere up and down, Chris Finch, like I thought he was going to lose a coach. I thought one of his assistants would finally, like Pablo had interviewed some places. Obviously, Micah is a hot candidate, and all those guys stayed. So again, pick anyone on the roster, in the organization, on the payroll. There's no excuses anymore. There should be nothing distracting them from being, as you just said, a really, really good regular season team. And then the playoffs, we do have to admit, like, sometimes that's just a crapshoot, right? I know it's a seven-game series, but sometimes things just, you know, if I say, hey, Western Conference Finals are bust, and then Ant gets hurt in the second round, am I going to be that disappointed if they also won 56 games? No. So I think this team should, unlike some other teams that have to figure out, like the Nuggets, right? New guys, Cam Johnson and like Tim Hardaway Jr., what the Rockets have to do. The Wolves should be able to start the race in mid-October and just start sprinting out of the gates. And I think that's kind of what you and I both expect them to do.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm going to end up, I think, being like below. My opinion of Houston is going to be below what the, either like the Vegas or the national lens is, just because, like, for honestly, from both, and they're going to be really good, like, obviously, but like from both a regular season standpoint, I'm not sure Durant is at the point in his career to carry a load like that. And they're going to miss, like, Jalen Green is a flawed player, but like they're going to, and home run trade for them, but like they're mm-hmm. going to miss Jalen Green. They're going to miss Dylan Brooks, both flawed players, but like, their defense was the biggest reason that they were successful last year. And Dylan Brooks was a part of that. And they're going to have to figure out how to navigate that. And like, just from the Wolves perspective, I think that's going to cost them enough games for the Wolves if they're playing their top to pass them. And then just with Denver, it's just, they're always going to be a much better postseason team than they are regular season team, just by their roster and the depth of it all. But I just think like top three seed should probably be the goal, because Oklahoma City could win 70 games if they felt like it, I think.
I was looking this up. So yeah, Oklahoma City's over under 62.5, which is just, is it
62?
Dude. So that means they would literally go like 63-19, which again is totally in the realm of possibility because they're loaded and they have a year of experience. Do they have a championship hangover? We'll see. I don't even think half their team drinks. But the Houston Rockets, going back to the kind of that second tier of Wolves, Rockets, and Nuggets, I just thought the Nuggets had like the greatest offseason in the league. Ironically, they're the guy calling the shots for them now is a former Timberwolves mm-hmm. front office exec who is working with Tim. But the Nuggets win total, Ryan, is 53.5. I could see them really crushing that because I just think they are now the perfect pieces around Jokic. But to your Rockets point, their total is 54.5. That's just a lot of wins for a team
Houston's
added,
54.5?
Yeah, for a team. Oh, Kevin Durant is really,
I gotta
really
good.
I
got to drive to Iowa and throw a bet on something.
Because after that, there's still a lot of question marks, right? Like, can they defend like that for 82 games? Do they have a second piece that will kind of elevate, you know? Obviously, you'd think like Amen Thompson would be the guy to maybe be that second fiddle, just as an overall talent, not just an offensive guy. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. But again, going back to the Wolves, 50 wins, that almost seems, with everything they've done and all the continuity and the pieces they're bringing back, that seems kind of like, knock on wood, a layup.
If they can't win 50 games, then like, they won 49 last year, and last year felt like a tire fire. Like,
yeah, it did. Yeah.
They got to win 50 games. My point with Denver would be, and I agree with you that like they made home run moves, but like their home run moves were to dig themselves out of a hole. And so, yeah. So in this analogy, they've dug themselves out of the hole and now they're at this baseline. Well, this baseline includes Jokic, which is, we'll see. He might be one of the 10 greatest players to ever pick up a basketball. So if we'll talk about Ant, and my point with Ant is going to be like, if you have a nearing his prime or Anthony Edwards with a half decent roster around him, you should win a bunch of basketball games. And Jokic, you don't even need the half decent basketball around him. But I just think long term, they're still kind of in this tough spot. Like Christian Brown, they're gonna have to pay him. They're in this tough spot, but at least for next year, like, none of that matters. I think their team got a whole lot better. And I, as much as like I want to pick the Wolves or whatever, like, that's why making the Western Conference Finals is gonna be tough, because I think there's two teams that are unfortunately clearly better than them. Now, I know me and Jack Borman are always kind of constantly down on OKC, but at a certain point, like, both me and him kind of got to look ourselves in the mirror and be like,
haters. Yes.
And we'll go back to Iowa State. As much as I want to be a hater with what happened in Game 7 and Tyrese Halliburton and that awful injury, it sucks because we don't know what happens in that Game 7. my mental story is that Halliburton brings them to glory, but yeah, they win the title. So it's like, you got a 60 win title team, and then the Nuggets won the title 2 years ago. It's going to be hard to break into that top two. And so I think, to kind of go back to the original question of what constitutes a successful season, is like, could I see a path for them making the finals when you like retroactively look back? So these past two seasons, like I kind of like they just Dallas kicked their butt. I don't think like they didn't really have a path to beating that team. And same thing with Oklahoma City. Like they this last Western Finals, they just had no chance. And so if you go into the next season, you win 54 games and you get Oklahoma City or Denver, you lose in seven. It's a hard fought battle. And you can just go, yeah, if we had one more thing go our way, we win. That's going to be a successful season to me, where if you win 57, you make the West Finals and you just get trounced by Oklahoma City again, then that's you're going to look at it and be like, we're right where we were two seasons ago, one season ago. And so it's kind of like I want to look back and like you talk about these tiers where I think I agree with you. They're on this tier with Denver and Houston. I don't think nationally people are viewing it that way. I think people are viewing Denver and Houston as their own tier. And so I want to be able to, at the end of the year, really be in going into next season being like, yeah, Oklahoma City's great, but we're not scared of that as fans. We're not scared of them. We can beat them. And I'm sure the players feel that way, but like sitting here right now, it's hard to imagine how they beat that Oklahoma City team.
And you were at all the exit interview stuff once the season wrapped up, but like one of this team, I think it's because you cover a team, so you kind of get familiar with all the little popular sayings. But one of the popular sayings from Tim Connelly is this whole concept of having multiple bites at the apple. So I do want to just clarify, because I don't think this is what you're saying, and I don't think this is what I'm saying. But this season, the 25-26 Timberwolves, is not like a championship or bust. Eventually, in the Ant era, that's got to be there. And you could argue that this year, whoever makes the NBA Finals out of the West will be favored to win it. You can just bet on that now because the Eastern Conference is having such a down year with the Tatum injury and, as you just said, the Halliburton injury. So, yeah, I think the Wolves, you know, we've talked about going over 50 wins. We've talked about what we expect. But I also don't want to make it just so, like, specific to how many wins will then equal my happiness level. Like,
for sure.
I would also be pretty amped. You know, they lose in game seven of the second round. They win 54 games. But you got a full season of the Jaden McDaniels you saw this past January and February, right? Or I know we're going to get into this, but like Rob Dillingham shows, albeit in a season where they lose in six games in the second round, that he is a starting point guard, right? Like some of the other stuff is just going to be about player specific because, again, I just don't want this organization or this team or the roster or whatever to take a step back because that's when you start to the pariahs come and into the can of worms and all that stuff. So I just want to see them continue to grow as individual players because if they win a championship in our championship or bust window, which I think is many years, it's going to probably need Rob Dillingham to be the starting point guard. It's going to need Jaden McDaniels to be, you know, a more reliable shooter in the corners on top of all the other cool stuff he showed you in January and February. And then you're going to need like a Naz Reid to take another leap, you know, like, he was always underpaid, and now he's suddenly probably properly paid. But you need him to make that contract of value over these next 5 years. So I think it's going to be fascinating, and I think it's going to be really interesting to see how Chris Finch uses all these guys, some who have had a lot of playing time here and some who are just kind of itching to get into the rotation.
Yeah, I did write this down as like one of a successful is just like individual player development from guy X, Y, Z. Yeah. I think you picked out the biggest ones. Obviously, like Ant is obviously the first one you talk about, and that's our next topic. But we I think we have a fairly good idea of the trajectory for Ant, where players like Jaden, Naz, Rob are more like the outcomes are more spread out. And like you mentioned, Rob is thinking about JJ McCarthy is kind of a similar deal where they are very much invested in Rob. If Rob does not work out, that's a pretty big swing and a miss. That's a pick they could have traded for XYZ. And I'm always like F the picks. Like what the pick, it's like it's fake money, but it spends the same as money is kind of my point. And teams accept it like money, even though it's not. There's a good chance that the pick they sent out for Rob to San Antonio when it got rerouted somewhere else already. I don't remember where it went. But it probably went Sacramento, I think, in the Fox trade. That player likely won't be anything. And if it is anything, it's 10 years after they let it go. But like we talked about the big swing, if Rob isn't a solid, I don't know what would constitute a success for that trade, but if Rob isn't at the very least a solid playoff rotation player, like it's that pick could have been sent out for someone else. Rob's a big one. Jaden, I think, is probably my biggest like what if for this season, because especially watching Jalen Williams in the finals is like, can Jaden be closer to that type of player, be the second or third best player on a title team level? Because he hasn't been to this point, and that's not a knock on him, but can we get that? And then you got the three bigs thing. They're still like work to figure out there what combination of the three bigs work best. And then as well as just kind of like, is Mike Conley someone they want to bring back for next year? Is that version of the team with Mike and Rudy, is that a version? So all of that, if they figure out all of that, but they end up winning 52 games and losing in the set, like then we're also in a successful season. So is there a player that we haven't mentioned that like you want to see, like learn something about?
Yeah, I think it's just part of the flaw of how I am personally made up. But I just kind of like to zig while they're zag. And like if Dante DiVincenzo was a stock, I'm pretty sure I'd be buying it right now just because I think his stock price is so low. Like the last taste of Dante DiVincenzo you had was kind of him, you know, for better or worse, failing in the playoffs. He didn't give you much. You talked about him earlier about like the spots that he had in New York. I don't think because of a wide variety of reasons, he was ever allowed to kind of play the role in Minnesota that he liked playing in New York when he had a career year before he was traded. So I think if he could just get back to playing, I think we can mention his name now legally, but if he could play more of that Malik Beasley role where he's just running around screens, catch and shoot, he can bring the ball up. I know that sounds really simple, like in the NBA, like, oh, can this guy dribble the ball up? But I know he can do it, but I just don't like him having to do it. I'd rather have the ball in his hands more. I'd rather Mike, when he's out there, be kind of running the show, and then obviously leaning more into Rob too, or even like Point Julius. So I think Dante would be another one where, like, I don't know, Ryan, what his development would be. I would rather just hit, like, can you get 8 threes off a game, and can you hit, you know, 3.5 of them? Or, like, can you be a 40, 42% three-point shooter on really high volume? Because I think that is something that this team really still needs, because I don't know what I'm going to get from Jaden in the corners, and because I don't know if Terrence is going to be, you know, a catch-and-shoot guy or more of a downhill transition guy. So, yeah, Dante would be another one. And then to your point about Mike and Rudy, like maybe we're going to talk about the Mike starting thing, but if you're bored, or you said, hey, I don't know if the national people are super high on this team. If you're bored about this team because they didn't do anything exciting this offseason, I would tell you that that's not going to be the status quo if they do let us down and don't make the Western kind of like this team is also positioned, if you look at their salaries and all the guys, to make a big move next summer. So to me, it's like, you know, if a mantra is no excuses, another mantra could be, and not to steal it from the Bulls, who had a little more success than the Timberwolves, but like this could be like the last ride of a Gobert at center, of a Mike Conley at point guard, because you do have younger players behind them at those positions that are eventually going to be relied on. You said Rob Dillingham. I mean, Johan Berenguer is kind of the same thing, right? Like they invested in getting him via the cat trade, ironically. And like at some point, his number is going to get called. So yeah, there's any guy, pick a guy, 1 through 15, Leonard Miller. Like this might be his last chance to really make a name for himself if he's ever given any sort of minutes. So a lot of expectations for a team that will bank on continuity, but it's like, okay, now it's time to cash in.
If you're paying more than $1 a month for any ED or hair medication, listen up. At Joy & Blokes, when you start TRT or in Clomiphene, you can add any ED or hair loss prescription for just $1 a month. $1 add-ons with your hormone plan, and right now, all labs are 50% off. I'm Josh Whalen, founder of Joy & Blokes. I built this company because men are tired of paying for fragmented care without results. Every Joy & Blokes lab includes a visit with a licensed clinician who connects your symptoms to your biomarkers. You'll get a real plan that covers hormones, performance, and confidence. If you're considering TRT or enclomiphene, this is the most efficient way to do it. Get started at joyandblokes.com and use the promo code PODCAST. New customers get 50% off their labs, and for a limited time, you can take advantage of our $1 ED or hair loss add-ons when you start TRT or enclomiphene. Not available in all states. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Learn more at joyandblokes.com.
Yeah, and your point on the salary cap stuff is good, because when we talk about like this being the last year of like, I guess it's, championship or bust is a bad phrase, but it's the best one I can think of. This being the last year of not being that.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole reason the cat trade happens is because this season and last season were when all the money starts, the crunch starts happening. So last year, Cat's big extension kicks in, and that's why they let him go, because by 2029, he's getting paid $60 million a year. And then this season is when Ant and Jaden's extension kicked in. And so they had to do a lot of work to stay under the second apron. You mentioned that it's not just about the money. You just can't make trades if you're in the second apron, basically. So to retain Nas and Julius and stay under the second apron, and they have a 15th roster spot left and enough space under the second apron to sign another minimum player or make a trade, and where you're taking in a small amount of money, more money, they have flexibility. But next year, even if so Mike's $11 million comes off the books, even if you just throw him in at like five, like if Mike's still playing basketball and you want to keep Mike at like $5 million, they have $18 million of second apron space for next season. And so that allows you to, if we're moving on from Rudy, if you're just signing someone like the taxpayer mid-level, they'd have fully open to them. Next season is when like you get that financial flexibility back. So this move that we're talking about, the theoretical move, becomes even possible without having to trade for a 36-year-old that doesn't want to be here.
Yeah, and that's like all the smart stuff that guys like you and Jack and Dane really get. And like, that is how they are financially set up. So that should be the talking point. I'm also interested in that, like, the guys behind Rudy and Mike. I mean, Rob Dillingham, and people are not going to like this, but he's just right now, he's just not as overall trustworthy as Mike Conley. Does he bring a lot to the table that Mike can't? Yeah, for sure. Same with like Berenger. Like, he's so raw. You're not going to expect him to give you the same level of performance as Gobert. But Gobert and Mike, slower, older, all that stuff. I'm curious a year from now, if this doesn't work out, Ryan, and you just mentioned all the salary cap flexibility they could have, whatever, do they lean into a different style of play? Because they are, and they're not trying to do what the Warriors did, which ultimately failed, but they're doing the two timeline thing of like, they're relying on the older guys to mesh with Ant and Jaden and Nas. And if the older guys just have a ceiling on it, next year they can get off the Rudy contract, right? Like you said, Mike Conley would be a free agent, and maybe you sign to a vet min or whatever. Maybe he just calls it quits. But if you really turn to like Rob at the point and Berenger at the center, like now you're a way more athletic team. And does this team finally just embrace like, hey, I mean, how many years since Anthony Edwards was drafted in 2020 have the Wolves been like bottom 10 in transition? Like that just seems like something that should be low hanging fruit for them with all the athletes and young guys they have on this team. So yeah, again, it's continuity. It's running it back. It's kind of stale and boring for now if you just prefer the big swings and transactions. But also, I think they're going to the thing that worked the best for them under Tim Conley, which was running it back. And if that doesn't work, I think they become one of the five most intriguing teams next summer for like, okay, big swings again, because like you said at the top, they might need one more move to kind of put Anthony Edwards into that final tier of contenders.
Yep. The pace thing is the biggest thing. They were 25th in pace last year. They've been pretty much at that for a while now. And I think with the roster they currently have, I don't think like top 10 in pace isn't realistic, but if you turn 25th into 15th, like there's just like that's just, the offensive rating is going to go up automatically. But
yeah,
my next biggest question is just, what are fair expectations for Anthony Edwards this season? So I did a little bit of research because I like doing this sort of thing. And I was thinking, how many teams have won a championship without having a first team All-NBA player on their roster? And it's a fair number of teams. It's about 10 as I look at since 1980, it's about 10. But like the list of championship teams that don't have a first team NBA guy is like, most of them are like, okay, but like that guy made first team All-NBA every other year. So a good example of this is Jokic in 2023. He was second, finished second in MVP and second team behind Embiid. So that's a first team All-NBA guy. The other players on this list are like Steph Curry in 22, Kawhi Leonard, which I don't know. Do we want to debate who the best player on the on that Spurs team is? Like, I don't think. Oh no, sorry. This is the Raptors. Kawhi Leonard. So like, the list of, and then it's Kevin Durant, Tim Duncan, Dirk Nowitzki, Hakeem Olajuwon, Isaiah Thomas, Magic Johnson. The one outlier of a team winning a title without one of the 25 greatest players ever or a first team All-NBA guy is the 04 Pistons, which every time you bring up an outlier title, it's always the 04 Pistons. Mm-hmm. Ben Wallace is probably the best player, and he was and even him was second team All-NBA that season. So my point with all this is like, Ant needs to make first team All-NBA this year, especially as unfortunately Jason Tatum is hurt and that mm-hmm. leaves open a spot. Again, there's nuance to that. If you make second team and five other players, blah, 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 or a bunch of wings, or like, that's fine. But like, it's time for him to be consistently be closer to the con. And he was, I think he finished like one, like Mitchell took his spot. He was a few mm-hmm. votes behind him. So he needs to be like a first team All-NBA caliber player. Cause if you're winning titles, you basically either have that or one of the 25 greatest players ever, which we can talk about if that's a fair ceiling for Ant either. But for now, I think first team All-NBA is like what I would want to see.
Yeah, I don't mean barring injury again, knock on wood, like Anthony Edwards will just automatically make one of the top three teams, right, for All-NBA. Mm-hmm. And again, there's nuance there, like you said, about if he's first team, second team, third team. Kind of splitting hairs here. I agree with what you said. I just, as someone who has placed wagers on Ant to like win MVP at very high odds in the past, he's never really gotten close. I mean, just kind of to be honest with you, in terms of like the MVP conversation. And again, MVP, first team All-NBA, like we're kind of talking about similar things, right? If you're in the MVP chat, that means you're probably a top five guy in the league. And if you're first team All-NBA, it literally means you were one of the five best players in the league that year. So
I did finish seventh. But I agree with you that he was nowhere near. I'm surprised by this. Looking it up, he finished seventh in MVP voting these last 2 years, which is it's a bit surprising to me.
No, that is surprising, especially to say in the last 2 years. But for me, it's just kind of like what we've been talking about again by making the Final Four and making the Western Conference Finals 2 years in a row, but you won one game in each series. Like mm-hmm. for Ant to this whole thing, I mean, none of the stuff we're talking about really matters if Anthony Edwards doesn't continue to level up and get from whatever seventh, eighth best player in the league to that kind of really tough to crack top three or four right now, which is kind of dominated by the international guys, right? So I'd be looking for him to be a top five MVP guy this year, because that MVP, as does All-NBA, but MVP is tied directly to your record, whether they want to admit it or not. So if Anthony Edwards is a top five MVP guy, that means, Ryan, they hit their over on their win total, right? So they're not going to, he's not going to go third in the MVP voting if they go 48 and, you know, 34. So I expect him to kind of level up again. And that goes back to like the continuity thing or just the fact he's been around all summer, albeit when he was in China, just kind of hanging out, working out with guys, you know, big brother and the younger guys, even though he's older, or Terrence Shannon Jr. is older than him. He's kind of taken TJ under his wing. So Anthony Edwards is the thing that drives this entire now $3.8 or whatever billion-dollar organization, and I'm with you. He needs to be first team, maybe second team, and he needs to kind of be in that MVP discussion because those tie into what your team's overall success rate is.
Yeah, and it's just for me personally, it's like it's hard to imagine the Wolves having a successful season where Ant is finishing second in the All-NBA. And it's a lot of that, again, it's because like Tatum is not going to be on that list anymore. And that just, yep. He would have, if you take Tatum off first team this last year, Ant makes first team. So
yep.
there's that. But like the list of people that would have to pass them are like players that you would go, that player's getting votes above Anthony Edwards. Like we're having problems. I guess maybe if like Steph Curry has a resurgent, like almost MVP type season, I'm not sure that's realistic for him, but like, what the guy, like, here's a good example. The guys on second team with him this last year were LeBron James, Stephen Curry, Evan Mobley, and Jalen Brunson. Like, those are just players that Ant, if the Wolves are going to hit their ceiling, Ant has to be a class above those guys. Mm-hmm. I really think so. And then third team was Cade, Kat, Tyrese Halliburton, Jalen Williams, and James Harden. All guys that, other, I mean, even like Cade Cunningham, like, And then obviously Tyree's hurt, unfortunately. But like, I think he's got to play at that sort of level. And I think back to December, I think it was December, maybe it was January, where they were just, I thought Ant was playing very poorly at that stretch and by his standards. And I kept saying, like, he is playing by his standards very poorly. And this was during it was after that Boston game. He had that really terrible quote about not wanting to pass or wanting to be both. And I think we all kind of talked about how he was not playing how he wanted to, but we understood why it was happening. The spacing, it's like that type of stuff. Like, we just need to we need to jump past. We just need to hit the ground running and immediately be able to. And all of those issues by March, basically, like they figured all those out. And it didn't feel like, well, really, until the Oklahoma City series, it didn't feel like he was getting, like, somehow the defense had six players on the court anymore. It felt like the spacing was there. They had figured that out. And so I'm just hoping that that poor stretch of play that he had, that I, even at the time when I was talking about it, I knew he would come out the other side of it. Like, I'm hoping they can avoid that stretch.
Yeah. And again, I think if you're someone who is kind of staled out by the fact that the Timberwolves didn't do any big Kevin Durant trades this summer, and you're like, oh, what is their plan? Just internal development. Because I get a lot of that, right? Kind of cynicism and being critical of, are they just going to hope that all the ingredients mature in the kitchen? A year ago, on September 16th, 2024, like, I don't think either you or I thought Anthony Edwards would lead the league in three-pointers, right? So it's like, what do you think Ant maybe worked on this summer? Is it his playmaking? Is it just cardio? Every time I check IG, like, he's running outside. Is it like that determined to make him a better two-way guy? Because as good as he could be defensively, we both know that that's not him on a night-in, night-out basis. And again, that's a ton of work to be the guy that has to be the primary scorer, oftentimes primary ball handler, and also be one of the two best defenders on the court. But that's kind of what you expect from him, right? Because he's shown you the ability to do so many things at such a young age. It's like, all right, well, we're going to keep moving the goalposts then in terms of our expectations. So, yeah, I'm with you on all that stuff. I think it's a really good year to try to make a run for it because, again, the Eastern Conference is pretty much broken. Outside of Cleveland, you know, now we're looking at like an Orlando Magic team that is really talented.
I think the Knicks will be really good.
The Knicks will be really good too. So that's kind of, Knicks and Cavs are in their own little tier, and then it kind of falls from there. But even in the West, like, I know we talked about the top four in our eyes, but I think it falls off after that. Like, if you're a Lakers fan, you're probably thinking that we're idiots, but it's like, well, I also watched pretty much the same Lakers team minus DeAndre Ayton not really put up much of a fight in five games against the Wolves. So it's there for the taking. It's not really championship or bust, but there is a window there for them to win a lot of games and to make a lot of noise in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think, like I already mentioned this nationally, I think people viewing nationally the Wolves more on that Lakers, Clippers.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe even the Warriors level. And I disagree. I almost view them as, at least in terms of title contender, they're kind of in their own tier, in the space between, at least, I actually, you know what, Wolves and Houston are on the same tier, and then it's like tier two Denver, tier one Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
That'd be my personal, at least in terms of playoffs, just because I, when you have like the best player in the league in his prime, three-time MVP, like Jokic just finished top two in MVP voting five straight seasons. I don't know how to efficiently do research on that, but like, when has that happened? Like Kareem, I'm sure, did it in the 70s before in a league that was not in a great spot. The NBA in the 70s was not what it was even in the 80s, and certainly not what it is now. I bet you Jordan hasn't, because he took the hiatus in the middle of there. Like, finishing top two in MVP voting, and the two times he lost, there was a coherent argument that he could have or should have won.
Yeah.
That type of player, like, and now they have a half decent thing. Like, that is just, the Wolves don't have that right now. And while Denver's like still a fantastic matchup for the Wolves, because they don't have a wing defender for Ant, they don't have the rim protector. Jokic is a better defender than his plotting size looks like he is, but like, he's not a rim protector in the traditional sense. So like, they're still a great matchup for the Wolves, but like, Denver's a terrible matchup for pretty much everyone else.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm with you. Again, I think we've kind of said it now that the expectations have to be high, not just for individual players, not just for Chris Finch now, who's been here a really long time, has kind of proven to be the most, whether he's the best coach in franchise history, which I think he is, he's shown to be the most successful. I mean, he's made it to two straight Western Conference Finals trips. So the organization's been cleaned up from top to bottom. They're bringing new people in, new faces like Matthew Caldwell. The ownership four-year dilemma has been settled. And now, again, everyone should be really comfortable. And that should allow this team to have one main goal, and that's how many games can we win? How high can we climb the Western Conference standings? And then ultimately, can we punch through this new kind of ceiling we've created for ourselves of being a gentleman's sweep in the Western Conference Finals?
If you're paying more than $1 a month for any ED or hair medication, listen up. At Joy & Blokes, when you start TRT or enclomiphene, you can add any ED or hair loss prescription for just $1 a month. $1 add-ons with your hormone plan, and right now, all labs are 50% off. I'm Josh Whalen, founder of Joy & Blokes. I built this company because men are tired of paying for fragmented care without results. Every Joy & Blokes lab includes a visit with a licensed clinician who connects your symptoms to your biomarkers. You'll get a real plan that covers hormones, performance, and confidence. If you're considering TRT or enclomiphene, this is the most efficient way to do it. Get started at joyandblokes.com and use the promo code PODCAST. New customers get 50% off their labs, and for a limited time, you can take advantage of our $1 ED or hair loss add-ons when you start TRT or enclomiphene. Not available in all states. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Learn more at joyandblokes.com.
Yep. And the last topic I wanted to close with, you mentioned ownership. Just kind of what do we expect from ownership in their first full season? I know I got to meet them out in Vegas like you did.
Yep.
My first time meeting them, you've kind of had a little bit more experience working with them on DaneSpot and in other ventures. But it's hard for me to not look. I don't know if you want to talk about the Kawhi situation. It's hard for me not to watch that situation and think about that in a Wolves lens. Certainly, obviously, the Joe Smith of it all, but like, just like, what is my ownership? I'm not. Would my ownership do that? Would I want them to? My easy answer is no. Please don't pay for someone $48 million outside of the salary cap. We already tried that once, and it did not work out. To be honest, it's not really working out for the Clippers, but. I guess I'll leave it to you. Do you want to touch on the Kawhi piece, or do you just want to go straight into the normal?
No, I mean, I think what your overall point is that, I mean, the Kawhi Leonard thing is so, it's like an onion. It's so layered. But overall, if you don't know what we're talking about, it's basically just a very powerful, rich owner doing anything he can to try to win a title by doing anything he can behind the scenes, whether it be legal or not legal, to retain or attract the best talent. As in a Wolves lens, you know, I joke a lot about how long it took for this team to be sold, kind of a 4-year layaway plan. I don't think anyone wanted that. I don't think Mark or Alex wanted that. They kind of had planned on like 2 years. But I will say that maybe the best thing that came from it was just, you know, like if you thought you were going to be a 6-month intern, Ryan, but you ended up being a 4-year intern, you'd probably be pissed off that you didn't have the keys to the thing after a while, but you learned a lot, whether you want to admit it or not. And I think that's a big thing. I mean, again, you not just got to see them at the press conference, but you got to like interact with them in a kind of a close quarter situation. And I guess I'd kind of want to know what your opinion was on it. But every time they're asked questions about whether it be the organization or the roster or the coaching staff or the front office, whatever, like they always make the right answer. And then they kind of back it up with, like, they back up their talk with actions. So as little of a thing as when we talk to them and they're like, we want to know what the fans think. Like, we want to get the pulse of the fan base. Then they sent out a survey and you could be as critical as you wanted. And I know that that feedback made it all the way back up to Mark and Alex. So I don't worry about my ownership group trying, you know, giving Ant $50 million to not plant trees in Minnesota. Like, I don't think that's going to happen, but I do think they are going to invest. And that's the big thing with ownership now, right? Like, my favorite thing that Mark Lowry told you and I in that basement of UNLV is that he's going to treat the Timberwolves like a startup. And by that, he means he's not worried on a year-to-year basis about what the books kind of say, because a startup's whole goal is to just raise, you know, kind of just build yourself up so that you can go public, or in this case, just the valuation of your startup. He wants the valuation of this team in 4 years has over doubled. Like, that's just like common knowledge now. They were sold for $1.6 billion. They are worth, according to anyone you talk to, maybe 3.8. I think the Blazers just sold for 4. They have a bad stadium situation as well. So they've already made their money back and then some. And now the fact that they're investing it in, again, Tim Connelly was a home run hire that I don't think Glenn Taylor would have ever done. They did the same thing this summer, less sexy and attractive because it doesn't directly touch the basketball stuff that we, you know, we interact with on 2K. But Matthew Caldwell from the Florida Panthers is a very, very, very well-respected kind of person in the sports business world. And he was sought after by many other organizations and turned them all down. So for him to say yes, move from Florida to Minnesota in general is kind of a big thing. But I think he is going to do a lot for the fan experience, their new app for buying and selling tickets, in-arena stuff. I just think this organization finally cleared up the mess of the roster, and now they have a really talented, contenderish roster. But they've never had a contenderish organization. And they want to mirror, back to the top, I'm depressed again, they want to mirror the Vikings. Because the Vikings, every, I guess, summer, when they do those surveys of the players, the Vikings get A's in all those categories and are, all success aside, like are deemed like the most world-class organization in the NFL. That's what Mark Lowry and Alex Rodriguez want to do with the Timberwolves.
Yeah, and I only laugh at the Vikings just literally just because of the Monday Night Football game. I agree with you.
Not with you.
They are generally a well-run organization, of course. But I think, yeah, the biggest thing with ownership is don't be meddling in the basketball side, and that's especially pertinent for the Lynx. Because I do know, like, the Lynx fans are a little bit, like, the owners are seen as, like, the men's owners and also the Lynx. And so I think, and I don't think they are going to, like, they see, they're not idiots. Like, they see what the Lynx have been able to do. Look, you can just go type in Minnesota Lynx playoff history, and you see very few playoffs, and then the head coach switches to Cheryl Reeve, and they make the playoffs, like, every year. So, like, I'm not worried about them meddling in really either side of the basketball, but certainly with the Lynx, who are hopefully on their way to the fifth title.
Well, yeah, again, I'm with you. I think one of the things they heard early when they got into it, just in general for the layaway plan, but then also once they got the keys this summer, is they know, I know this, we're talking Timberwolves here, but they know how damn smart and good and successful and well-respected Cheryl Reeve is, and they... all they want to do is just support them and get out of the way, right? Like, whatever you got to do for, like, family rooms behind the scenes. Again, a lot of stuff that maybe fans don't see, but you and I see when we're back in the tunnel. Like, just invest in the Lynx, get out of the way, because Cheryl is, in terms of a WNBA to NBA comp, I mean, she is on that Spurs Popovich kind of thing of not only is she a really good coach, but she and her staff have a really good pulse of the league. And again, not to nerd out over the WNBA, but, like, that Chicago Sky trade they made was just another kind of, you know, Spursian kind of 3D chess move. So you have a Lynx team that could win a title here in a couple weeks also could have a top two or three pick in the next WNBA draft, a WNBA draft that's going to have some real talented players in it. So I'm with you on that. And I think just big picture for me, but I did kind of want to ask you again, like, what you thought about Mark and Alex in Vegas. But every time Mark and Alex say that they want to put the, you know, bring in the best people and then get out of the damn way, they have done it. So I understand being, you know, critical or cynical, because maybe you're a Twins fan and you remember that, yes, Alex Rodriguez owns your favorite basketball team now, but he did own your favorite baseball team in the past. Like, I think these guys are going to come in and continue to invest in the people. Mark Lowry's big thing is vision capital people. Invest in the people, put the capital in it, show them the vision, and then just get out of the damn way. And that, to me, sports or non-sports, Ryan, right? Like, we both have jobs. That's the best way to run an organization.
Yeah, and you mentioned the valuation of the Wolves. The valuation of the Lynx has gone up, like, I don't know the exact, like, 10x.
Yep, they, for sure, yeah,
it
yeah.
Was the Lynx were basically a throw-in to this asset deal, and they are worth hundreds of millions of dollars. They could spin off the Lynx. They felt like selling them, and the Lynx would recoup a sizable portion of their investment in it. And that was not the case when they first bought it. The WNBA has exploded. It was already on the path to there. And then Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and players like that have just accelerated it. And the WNBA is very profitable, and they're fortunately the collective bargaining stuff is going to be just a bloodbath them trying to figure that out. And obviously, I think we all support the players on getting a especially when they're getting paid like 8% of revenue. It's garbage. But you mentioned running it like a startup. And I did want to mention the negative aspects of that, which is they did let go of a lot of people this offseason. And I'm not even necessarily criticizing them. I feel bad for the people that were let go, especially because it just, I know if I work for the Wolves and Alex Rodriguez laid me off of all people, not necessarily my favorite athlete, setting aside a personal race, getting to know him, but like, I feel bad for them. Like Sarah Perez is someone we both got to know from Wolves PR, was let go. So that unfortunately is part of running a startup. When a startup gets acquired, that people get let go. So that's a negative aspect of it. It's not to even criticize anything that they're doing there. But, and you also mentioning bringing in their best people, that I would assume that will continue to happen as well. And that's going to be, I'm very interested. The business side is especially where I'm interested. I've played around with their app a little bit. They haven't started letting season ticket holders sell the tickets yet, which is that's standard at this point in the calendar. But I'm interested to see once that starts to happen, what the fees look like. Mm-hmm. What they mentioned the lighting in Vegas. I don't know if you heard if they were able to get that done with the mayor's office, but when they get that done, what does that look like? Just in general, and this is not even their fault. Fans and consumers, probably in just America, but certainly in sports, consumers and fans have just been getting raked over the coals constantly. Like just getting destroyed everywhere, except seemingly concession stands at the Falcon Stadium. It seems to be the only place where fans can get a $5 burger or whatever. I'm just wondering, and again, they have to run it like a business and to a certain extent, but like, I just wonder, like when I see you go to and you want chicken fingers and it's $15. Like, is there just no, maybe I'm naive, but like, is there no goodwill? Again, this applies pretty much every sports. So like just charging $5 for the food.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. And I know you saw the press release about like the schedule or tickets going on sale. I thought I saw that like they're doing a bunch of $15 tickets for like the preseason. Which again, you could be critical of because that's low hanging fruit, and the preseason can be kind of a joke, and we could be getting, you know, 24 good minutes.
Who is the opponent in the second game?
I don't. They're not in the league.
No, they're not, or this country.
but I'm with you though on kind of the bigger thing, and I think I speak for you here in terms of we know people that were let go, and just a barometer for me is I don't really like seeing people lose their jobs. It's a really tough environment out there to try to get a new job right now in this current moment. So I am totally with you and echo that. I would say to play a devil's advocate that you can't, not you, but like in general, you can't be like, oh, this team has always been a country club, you know, all this stuff. And then like get mad when they get rid of people at the country club. So it is kind of a twofold of like, and I always, you and I will probably never fully own the Timberwolves. Maybe we'll get a piece. But like when I got my house, it's like, this is my house. I'm going to do whatever the hell I want. And if you and I were to like become, you know, co-governors of the Timberwolves, I bet we would hire some of our friends and let go of some people that maybe we didn't see eye to eye with. So that is kind of the nature of the beast. And again, it sucks when you see people, you're like, oh, I remember talking to him or her behind the scenes. And now they're kind of out there floating in the wind. But I think it's a bigger thing about trying to install a culture that, again, for the most part, like started with the Tim Connelly hiring, now Matthew Caldwell, but also another one of their big game hunting moves was like Michael Grady, right? And like that was a Mark and Alex thing. So I know I sound like I'm so drinking the Kool-Aid, but they're going to mess up at some point. They're going to charge you again in October, $16.99 for a hot dog. And I'm like, all right, what are we doing here? But for now, you do kind of have to give them the benefit of the doubt because while Anthony Edwards turned this thing around, all this stuff, and Ryan, you're there behind the scenes, that goes into supporting, keeping that train on the tracks, they've been really good about it, and I expect them to continue to do that. And the big one, which I think will be Matthew Caldwell's number one thing on his job description, will be getting this new stadium because I think if you can get a new stadium that's privately funded, I don't know what the cost will be for hot dogs, but if you can get a new stadium that ups the fan experience and doesn't charge taxpayers money, I think that would be a massively well liked, respected move in the community. So, yeah, the business side, like I always say, you and I geek out over that probably more than the basketball side. And I'm really curious to see what Matthew Caldwell under Mark and Alex does moving forward.
Yeah, I take your point with like the country club. I was more thinking about like the ticket reps they let go. Like that's I'm not gonna come here and stump and say they did anything wrong because I don't know. I don't know they're fine. Like I don't work there, so it's be unfair for me. It's more just like pointing out the empathy for those people that like they had more or less an entry level job or whatever the next level above that is, and it's like I'm not sure they needed to let go, but.
And I'm with you again on that. I just think of when you and I got started in all this many years ago, kind of covering the team, blogging, whatever, or like 10 years ago when they had like college night, they needed so many ticket salespeople because they needed so many boots on the ground to cold call people because no one wanted to go to games. Now this thing is probably one of the hottest tickets in the city. And it's like, do we need 30 people to push those tickets or are people literally knocking down the door to try to get into Target Center? So that is unfortunately, I mean, you're so right, but that is happening in my organization, right? As AI becomes more prevalent, it's like, do we need all these entry-level people to, you know, be executive assistants, or can we just kind of lean into AI? And it's super depressing. And it's like, big picture, are we going to have an economy? But it's not any different in what the NBA is doing right now than kind of in the big business world. So, but again, at the end of the day, it's like, you just don't want to see people lose their jobs. That it kind of behind the scenes been a key part of kind of building this thing up as well. Because again, Anthony Edwards deserves all the credit, but yeah, you and I have friends in the ticket sales department. It's like those people work really hard and have helped add to the whole fan experience. So there's always some negative kind of with a positive. So I'll be curious to see moving forward, if they did let people go, who do they bring in? Who gets a new opportunity and that type of stuff? But to me, that's still the most fascinating thing because we know what to expect. You and I have basically said the Wolves are going to be between, I don't know, 45 wins and 55 wins, kind of in that range. This organization could do so many things. And I'm curious to see if they take all the feedback they got this summer in that survey and start to implement it starting in October.
Yeah. My bigger picture is like, I'm interested to see if they can basically put their money where their mouth is.
Yep, that's a great point.
And they haven't done anything that would lead me to believe they can't. But to play devil's advocate against them, it's like a lot of what they say is what anyone would come in and say. Of course, they're going to want to do cool things. Now, not everyone has their own ticket company that they're running. And I mean, I don't want individuals to lose their job, but I would love Ticketmaster as a corporation to lose their job like that, because you know what I'm saying? Companies like that stink. So I'm interested. Concessions are obviously a small item, but, and then just their willingness to spend, which I, up until this point, I don't know how you could complain about that. Retaining Nikhil was not a realistic outcome. That's just how sports work. Unfortunately, like you get better, you lose guys, and they've done a good job replacing them. So I'm just, when it does come to like, if they had made the Durant trade, and I think, I don't remember back then if they could have done that and stayed under the second apron, or I don't think so. Like what is their willingness to spend, or once this repeater tax come? Cause like you mentioned the Twins. And that's a sore subject for Minnesota sports fans currently, as they just completely tear down the roster and are ready to, like, you just can't. And that's a Aaron Gleeman in The Athletic always, when you mention like they have to, I mentioned it, you have to run it like a business. Well, they're not running the business well. The Twins aren't.
Right.
So like, I think like at the very least try to run the business well. And up until this point, I think that we have no reason to doubt them, but that doesn't mean that they, like, that doesn't mean anything really. So I'm curious.
In traditional sports, the GM, the president of basketball operations, whoever's building the roster, they want ownership to spend an unlimited amount of money. And one thing, if you remember Tim Connelly's exit interview, the number one person within this organization that doesn't really want to be in the second apron again is Tim Connelly. It's not ownership. Because if you go back to the timeline of when this litigation kind of figured out and the arbitrators sided with Mark and Alex 2-1, it was Mark and Alex that had to write that check for the luxury tax, which was like north of $100 million. That came out of their pocket. Now, again, no one empathizes and sympathizes for billionaires. who have already made like $1 billion on their investment. But that's, I mean, that was kind of to your point, spending and putting money where their mouth was on a roster that ultimately couldn't crack the finals. So yeah, I'm with you on that. I think the privately funded stadium will be the big one now, because if they've, everyone associated with this thing has been on the record saying like, we want to build a new one, we want it to be state of the art, and we also want to do it privately. And if they stick to that, I think that's a big chess piece in kind of earning even more trust with this city and this state.
Yeah, I think the only part of quote unquote private or public money that they'll get is a lot of these stadiums, Minnesota United, when they built their stadium, they're not paying property tax on the building.
That'd be so nice. Can you imagine?
Yes, I can't imagine very much so. We can argue it's a off the pod discussion for like a political town hall, but like whether they should or shouldn't get that privilege. But like, if that's the only public quote unquote money they're getting, I think like that, like you mentioned, that'd be big. I again, topic for another pod, I don't know where they're building this thing, and I really don't want it to be in the suburbs. I want it to be downtown, but I don't know where that is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think for now they will. Again, I should also say this too. Like, we know in general, like this, Matthew Caldwell signed a 10-year deal to be the CEO of the business side for many reasons. One of them is it's probably like an 8-year window to try to find the location, figure out the financing, and then build it. So like the Anthony Edwards, for better or worse, is probably not going to win a title in the new stadium, right? Like maybe, but like he's going to be probably in his 30s, albeit he's 24 right now, when this thing finally has the grand opening and they cut the ribbon. So, but yeah, I think they're going to exhaust, Ryan, every option they can to do this downtown. They know the importance of trying to kind of like rejuice the core of the city, and not get in the suburbs, but also too, you have to find enough space because you don't just build stadiums anymore, like the old Texas Stadium where it's just surrounded by miles of parking lots. You have a hotel that you maybe own, right? Like you have all this stuff. Even think about where the Vikings practice. They have a lake and they have the Omni Hotel, and like they kind of dominated Eagan. Again, that's in the suburbs, but they have to find a spot where they can kind of build the whole plex of kind of like you saw the Bucks do in Milwaukee. Because again, that's a revenue generator for them. If you own the stadium, you own all the nights that you have concerts and other events, and all that money goes back into your pocket. So they've got a lot of smart business people. It'll be interesting to see, like you said, where they park this thing, this new stadium. But yeah, I think that is definitely something that we won't have to talk about every night come season time, but it's definitely something in the back of my mind because that's the next big domino for this organization, because it's not only for the Timberwolves, man, it's for the Lynx too.
Yeah. And you mentioned like, if they do really go like the Jerry World or Atlanta was the situation A-Rod brought up in Vegas, where they're out in the suburbs of Atlanta, but they have all that entertainment area around it. In the NBA, that just isn't a thing. Every single stadium is downtown. The Clippers are the only stadium that isn't in the city that it's named for. And that's even like a trick. Like they're right by the airport.
They're right
by LAX. So like every single stadium is, again, the Clippers are not downtown, but like LA is not, like there isn't that. That's not they're been more or less a downtown. Like,
yep.
The not a single team is like the Brewers are out in the parking lot. The Chiefs and the Royals share like a little parking lot. You meant like the two tech, the Rangers and the Cowboys are out, and like no NBA team is like that. And that doesn't mean they can't do it that way. It would be unprecedented.
I'm with you. I think there's many topics that Matthew Caldwell will have to tackle moving forward. The stadium will be the biggest because it is the most expensive. But I also think he, if you go look at his resume with the Florida Panthers, and I know the Florida Panthers won a couple Stanley Cups. I think that's still more about what they did on the hockey side rather than like the business side, even though the business side is very important. But like, when Mark Laurie asked you, me, and John, and Dane, and Chris, like in Vegas, like what's something that you think is important? And Dane spoke up and he's like, making sure that every single person in this city and in this state can watch Anthony Edwards play basketball. And Matthew Caldwell was instrumental in getting all the Florida Panther games on like local TV. So I think that'll be a big challenge for him early on. The stadium might take 8 years, but can you get, you know, Jim Pete, Michael Grady, and whoever fills, I mean, I don't think Michael Grady is going to be doing more than like a quarter of the games, but whoever replaces Grady, like, can you get those people Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, Rob Dillingham, can you get them on TV? Because that is easily the most organic way to build the next generation of fans. Because you and I are in this because we watched Michael Jordan play on WGN. We watched LeBron play on TV. Like, who is going to be able to, in this state and in this community, watch Anthony Edwards play? That's how you'll kind of grow this thing at a pretty exponential rate.
Yep, agree. Got to get him on TV. Can't be behind a giant paywall. But
yep.
That's where we'll wrap up. Really appreciate you coming on. What do you got to plug? I know you mentioned Dane. You'll be on with him, I'm assuming, again.
Yeah. I think this year him and I might be going to twice a week. I'll strictly be over at the Dane Moore NBA podcast. So if you can go like that, subscribe to that on Apple, Spotify, YouTube. So we'll just be, you know, like, again, going back to when you and I started, the team wasn't very good. Now that the team is good, we have expectations for them. And I think there should be expectations that if you create content covering this team, it's never been easier to do so. So we're going to try to up the amount of podcasts we do. I know you'll be doing a lot. I'm sure I'll be back on here as well. So a lot of cool people, I think, covering the Wolves right now. And I'm digesting all the stuff you guys are doing covering the Lynx. So it's a really cool time in Minnesota sports. At least on the basketball side, maybe not football and definitely not baseball, but, Minnesota basketball right now is kind of peaking. Shout out to Paige. I think she won rookie of the year, the WNBA last night or today. So it's a cool time to be following basketball in this state. And I really appreciate you having me on here. Cause you do a great job, by the way. This pod has become part of my weekly, monthly routine. And I know you'll be doing a lot of episodes this season.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. Now I'm looking forward to another season of you and Dane and all the other Wolves pods that we got in the rotation, and we'll actually have some stuff to talk about. Like you mentioned, 2 weeks away from training camp, and the preseason starts right after that. But for Kyle, I'm Ryan. Thank you for listening. Go Wolves. Ayoo!